More Business Briefing right now on FM News 101.
And back at 5:35, as we welcome the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title, Patrick Stone here. Pat, how big of an impact do you think the political upheaval over in Europe really has here in the U.S.? You know, we saw a stalwart Republican power broker, moderate Richard Lugar from Indiana, lose in the primary this past week. Is this a preview of things to come here or not?
Well, Brian, I do not believe the two things are connected. I think Lugar lost because he was out of touch with his constituency. I think the voters believed that he was getting a little long in the tooth, and when they found out he had sold his home and no longer was a resident and hadn't been a resident for 35 years, they became disenchanted with him. I don't think it was in any way connected to the European political issues. I think it was more a matter of a perception within that state that it was time for a change. And, if there should be some concern over it, I really think the concern should be that we're losing someone who really practiced bipartisanship and who was really, democracy is the art of compromise. I think Richard Lugar was a statesman, and I believe that we have got another fairly ideological representative now in the U.S. Senate, and that may be I guess he isn't there yet. He's running for the U.S. Senate, and that bothers me, but I don't think it had anything to do with Europe.
When you draw the parallels between Europe and the U.S., they are, I guess, very different. Maybe they aren't parallels because the austerity that's been implemented there. I guess Europe's in a very different situation than we are, right?
Well, they are, and we speak of Europe as if it's a contiguous economic and political entity. I mean, an integrated economic and political entity. It is not. We tend to do that because they use a common currency. But as you and I have spoken before, that perhaps is a mistake without having an integrated financial system and a more unified political structure. What is happening in Europe is problematic because you have a disparity, a significant disparity between the people that benefit from a common currency and those that don't. If you look at Europe today, you have countries like Greece who are having tremendous economic problems and actually social problems and political problems on top of it. But typically what would happen is because the economy is doing poorly, their monetary unit would be devalued compared to other countries. And consequently, their exports would pick up because their goods would be cheaper. That doesn't happen in Europe right now. In fact, it's almost a rigged game because Germany, which has been an export economy from the get-go, has benefited tremendously from the use of the euro because its currency has never appreciated compared to the countries that are importing its goods. So consequently, Germany has benefited tremendously from the euro. The less economically developed countries and the countries having economic problems can't benefit from devaluing their currency. And then that is compounded by the fact that you don't have common issuance of debt. So you have a really, really messy situation. And I think I've expressed to you before personally, I didn't think the euro was a good idea. And I really continue to believe that Greece probably can't stay in the euro. And then the other countries that are having problems like Portugal, Spain, and Italy, really, if you look at them closely, their problems are different. Spain, for example, it's not sovereign debt in Spain, it's private debt. The public debt in Spain is well within common constraints. I think it's actually lower than Germany's. But the private sector in Spain really ramped up and used debt extensively, and so consequently have high unemployment there. And I think one of the things that scares everybody is if Greece falls out of the euro or withdraws from the euro, does money leave Spain, Italy, Portugal, and some of the weaker countries, and does that precipitate sort of a domino effect? So Europe has its issues. How long it goes, we don't know, but the longer it goes, the more threatening it is to the world economy, and because it does represent about 32 or 33% of the world economy.
Let's hope they get things straightened out. If you're just tuning in, Patrick Stone joining us from WFG National Title. Closer to home, Pat, the Fed, they get another job report before their June summit. Now, we have the guys at PIMCO, the big dogs there, and Goldman now calling for QE3 at the meeting coming up June 19th and 20th. Now, if you had to put a number on it, what are the chances the Fed will implement another round of quantitative easing?
You know, Brian, that's to answer your question directly, I would say probably 90-10 that they will, but it won't be called quantitative easing.
Uh-huh.
I think they're very, very adept at creating liquidity in the market without necessarily beating the drum and calling it a QE function. And to be honest with you, I believe very much in having a balanced budget, but I will tell you that their behavior to date has been our salvation. And people can rant and rail against the Fed and loose monetary policy, but I think it has served us well to date. Now, eventually, it will become a problem. You can't have abundant funds forever without some inflationary impact. But I do believe the Fed will maintain a very, very proactive stance on keeping interest rates low and credit available. Whether it's QE, called QE3 or not, I don't think that they'll take the political risk of calling it QE3.
Okay. I was going to ask you this in the next segment, but this plays off of what you just said, and I'm concerned that are they creating an asset bubble in the stock market by continuing to keep rates low?
Well, that's a tough one, Brian. I think to make a general statement like that is hard because the stock market really has a broad spectrum of equities and investments, some of which are in a bubble phase. I would tell you that I think social media is a bubble.
Yeah.
But I don't think some of the industrials are horribly inflated. If you look at the overall stock market value, I think the multiple is actually down one from this time last year. So it's probably less frothy this year than it was last year at this time. I think there's a bubble in some assets. I think we are in a protracted period of time where we will have asset bubbles because there is so much liquidity in the world. And that process, as you and I have talked before, started in 1980. So we're locked into this. I mean, I candidly don't see us getting out of this anytime in my lifetime.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a pretty bold statement. So you think this is going to be continuing for the next couple of decades then?
Well, I'm glad you think I'll live a couple more decades. I appreciate that.
You're looking good, Pat. You're in great shape. Come on.
I'm hoping for three or four, but I tell you, Brian, I think that we have we've already dealt the cards. I think we have a global economy in which credit has become a mainstay. Easy credit or available credit has been a mainstay to growth. That is not necessarily bad if there's discipline with it. But if you look at, you and I've had this conversation on the air before, there's $50 trillion worth of credit market debt in our country alone. Consumers are at about $2.65 trillion in debt right now. We use credit. We use credit aggressively in our society, and so does the rest of the world. And as long as credit is such a main part of the economy, you're going to have sloshing, or what I call the sloshing effect, where money moves quickly into attractive assets. Almost inevitably, those assets become inflated. It was the internet bubble and the real estate bubble, and there's probably been 100 other smaller bubbles along the way. And this is the way it's going to be. And I don't think unless there's some tremendous socioeconomic restructuring of the world economy, this is the way it is.
Okay, we'll get used to it. Well, with all the talk about the 1%, Pat, the Buffett rule, soaking the rich, why hasn't anybody proposed a Facebook tax? If you get Facebook RSUs at ordinary income, I mean, why not throw another 10% on there?
I thought that was a great idea, Brian. I think the bigger question is why we don't have a value-added tax. I think we are the only country in the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD countries. I believe we are the only one without a value-added tax. A value-added tax basically is, in effect, a sales tax. And in most of the OECD countries, it runs, from 4 to 10%. And you hear a lot of a lot of political posturing from time to time, where people say our tax rates are high compared to the rest of the world. Well, if you throw in the VATs that everybody else uses, they are not high compared to the rest of the world. And that is a consumption-based tax, which I think anybody will mm-hmm. tell you long-term promotes savings and is a healthier way to tax. So to answer your question, I think you're going down the right road.
Okay, well, I guess it's about time. Well, when we come back, we'll continue with Patrick Stone. We'll talk about consumer borrowing spiking in the month of March. Why is that? And we'll get his take on real estate. That's up next on Business Briefing.